In the NBA spotlight, the tale unfolds. A coach dismissed, while stars and stories are told. All-star festivities, a dazzling display. Ratings soaring high under the night's bright array. Man versus woman, three-pointers ignite. The hardwood buzzes with the highlights of the night. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board. And I am here with my co-host, Eddie Aparicio, who disappeared last week at the time we were going to recap the Super Bowl, where his Niners got whacked.
I'm Jesse. Come on, man.
I'm half Jesse. I was bitter. I was bitter because that game went, Eddie, exactly as most prognosticators predicted. And it irks me to hear them say, oh, it's Patrick Mahomes. At the end of the quarter, at the fourth quarter, he's going to take over and win the game. And I hated that because it came true, but not without help. What is your take, one, on the loss? Give me your top three reasons why they lost. And then just go right into Steve Wilkes' firing. And I'm gonna give you my 2 cents worth, but let's hear it from you first, brother.
So I got to tell you, I thought the Niners were manhandling the Chiefs in the first half. It was pretty evident that they were moving the ball at will. What unfortunately happened is I think that some of their momentum was deflated after that McCaffrey, you know, fumble on the first drive. That definitely made him go, oh, crap, we're in a game because, you know, they had it. I mean, they were moving the ball at will. Even after that, they were moving the ball at will. And then, you know, something that concerned me the weeks coming up to the playoffs, and actually it revealed itself a lot in the playoffs. There's two things. One, the defense was not playing as well as they should have. That team is stacked from a personnel standpoint. I mean, they have all pros all over the place for both sides of the ball, both offensive and defense. But for some reason, that defense wasn't playing up to the level that it should have. And they had superstar caliber players on the front seven. And for whatever reason, they were being exposed by the Packers as well as the Lions on the running game. And I thought,
oh, the Ravens. Don't forget the Ravens this season.
Yeah, that too. But I'm like, oh, my God, Isaiah Pacheco's going to go off, right? And, you know, one of my predictions of the game was going to be a low-scoring game, which I was right.
Correct.
And I thought it was going to be a very run-heavy kind of offense on both sides. You know, both teams were going to run the ball pretty effectively. And the Niners definitely did. But what happened, in my opinion, is that, you know, Kyle Shanahan, with his play calling, I was getting so frustrated during that game that he was not taking advantage of having the best offensive weapon in the entire game. I would say McCaffrey was probably the better player overall in the entire Super Bowl over even Patrick Mahomes. But the thing is that his play calling, he was moving away a lot from it, kind of like weird, puzzling play calling, like doing a bunch of like passes in a row. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? Run the ball. You have this freaking beast of a player in McCaffrey, and you're not utilizing him in the right way. And it was just pissing me off. So you asked me for my top two or three reasons. Number one, their defense was really suspect, although I think they played a very good Super Bowl until the fourth quarter. And then two, the play called by Kyle Shanahan was just maddening to me. So those are the two reasons why I think they lost.
Right, and I agree. But I'll tell you why his play calling is like that and nobody ever questions it, because they're not allowed to question him. Nobody goes up to him, challenges, boss, what are you doing? That goes all the way back to his offensive coordinator days in Atlanta. I'm speculating here, but I work off a human nature. I have served with hundreds of men. I have worked with dozens of men above me. You quickly learn to identify personality traits because you don't want to get stabbed in the back by somebody in the military, which happens a lot, and you want to understand where your boss is coming from. You have to know the nuances in the military. It's any job in reality to survive. But in the military, you work with so many different people, so many personalities. I learned to recognize certain traits. Which manager/leader in the division or the department or on the command itself you could go up to, give your frame of mind, give your peace of mind. And you also knew those who you couldn't say anything to. And I suspect Kyle Shanahan's play calling, he's that type of person. Leave him alone. He's calling play. Yeah, he doesn't want to bother with that. And somebody needs to get in his face. The other thing, Eddie, they don't have leadership on that team. The Chiefs did. In the fourth quarter and in overtime, I mean, their leader stepped up. We got to get this done. My issue with leadership, again, is my military upbringing, partly the third world upbringing. People in third world or people without anything, they want hope. You know, that comes with leadership. People in the military, they want somebody they'll go to war for. I will not go to war for Kyle Shanahan. I will go to war for Dan Campbell. As much as I poo-poo Dan Campbell, I know Dan Campbell would have my back. Kyle Shanahan doesn't have that type of leadership ability in my eyes. Now, that said, to the audience, Eddie and I are on the outside looking in. They may have leaders there, but if they did, they failed. But that team looks like a robot, meaning emotionally they don't go up, they don't go down, they're just there. So when they start to get dominated, they don't have the rise above that. Now, they did in the playoffs, but that's because – their whole careers and lives were on the line. They had no choice. But they barely did it against the Lions. And the Packers should not have even been on the same field as the Niners when you switch the talent. However, the greatest travesty is Steve Wilks, and his firing was deserved. But that was based off of Steve Wilks' play calling, his style, etc. But he should never have been hired. He was somebody from the outside who did not fit. And he took the job because he wants to be a head coach. And Robert Saleh. And D'Amico Ryans. But those two fit that defense. And I think Steve Wilks did not have respect for the players. When I say respect for the players, what I just said, would they go to war for him or not? And this is why. I don't care what kind of attitude you're in. What kind of mood you're in, how angry you're in. I don't care about any of that. One thing I also learned in the military, you keep your drama in-house.
Right.
Nick Bosa should never have said, yeah, we didn't even know how to read the read option there. We had to practice that or anything. He threw his boss, Steve Wilks, under the bus. But to me, that just told me it's not that they disliked him. He wasn't their guy. You know, now John brought up a phenomenal point. You're a diehard Niners fan. You know that team inside and out. He goes, "Who's number 48?" I go, "Oh no." He goes, "That's the guy who replaced Greenlaw, and that's the guy that Kansas City started going after." That was a massive point. But I thought the best point of the night was done on Super Bowl night by Tony Romo when he was in that cover zero. Everybody knew they were going to blitz. You know, and you cannot tip off Patrick Mahomes. You just can't. You know?
Yeah.
And Kyle Shanahan called a timeout. It wasn't the first time he felt forced to call a timeout, Eddie, I believe, because of the Minnesota Vikings game when right before the half he dialed up the same play and they burned him for a touchdown and the Niners went on to lose that game. So I think that, but at the end of the day, what pisses me off is Patrick Mahomes, it doesn't piss me off, it just aggravates me as a student of the game. Patrick Mahomes is no different. Andy Reid did not do a great game. He deserves all the accolades he has as a coach's career. But I'm sorry, Andy Reid reminds me this year of Dan Reeves. And John Elway talked about this because he did not like Dan Reeves. They had a tempestuous relationship. He goes, "I get tired of Dan Reeves and his play, and the play calling is off super conservative. And then in the fourth quarter, he tells me, I got to win it. Go scramble. Go do what you do best. Go do this." He goes, and all he's doing is setting me up for injury. I'm paraphrasing a lot, but that's kind of what John Elway didn't like. And that's what I see. That's what I see out of Andy Reid this year. That's why I knew the fourth quarter would be. I didn't care about the three quarters. I cared how they were going to handle Patrick Mahomes once Andy Reid just cut him loose, let him use his legs, let him do this. Am I looking at it completely wrong, or do you think that there's some truth to that in what I've said?
You know, just the more and more I think about this game, I get frustrated. they had them. I mean, this would have been a storybook ending for this Brock Purdy kid, you know, being Mr. Irrelevant, coming to his first Super Bowl after having an injury that, you know, essentially he missed, you know, a
that's right. Game time,
right? You know, from last year's game against Philadelphia, you know, he tore his ulnar, ulnar ligament or whatever it is that, yeah. on his throwing arm, and he couldn't.
That's throw. A major tendon that is career ending for in 20, 30 years yeah. ago.
And the thing is that he came back, took Mahomes, it had to come back from behind. Mahomes had to come back from behind because they were losing. And, of course, you know, you can question the whole decision that Kyle Shanahan, you know, should have, you know, actually, you know, kicked off had the Kansas City receive the ball rather than the Niners. But I understand why the call was made. But, right. you know, Brock.
Oh, Purdy, I know.
Brock Purdy and the Niners had the Chiefs on the ropes. But they just, they just fell apart from play calling. I think the players.
You got to admit, you got to say plays. The word, Eddie, you got to say the word. They what?
I'm not going to say choked.
Yeah, they did.
I'm not
going to
say choked.
They choked.
By
definition, they choked. They had it. You just said it. They had it. They had him on the road.
They had it. And, man, they had it. It was their game, man. And, you know, I told you. You know, if it was any other team besides the Kansas City Chiefs, I'd be even more pissed. Way more pissed. But Kansas City is my second favorite team since the 80s. You know, I'm even, look, you know, this is showing it. I am a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I am wearing it, even though the Niners are my number one team. I'm still going to wear the Chiefs for the next few weeks just to show that I am really a Chiefs fan as well. But, man, that game hurt only because they had it. And they just, I don't want to say choked. I think they just got outclassed at the very end.
Why don't you say
by
choked?
By a better offensive-minded coach in play calling abilities, in my opinion, Andy Reid, and then a better quarterback at this time than Brock Purdy is Patrick Mahomes. I think Brock Purdy proved the naysayers wrong in this Super Bowl. He actually played a very good Super Bowl. Yeah, did he miss some throws? Yeah, they all missed throws, right? But I thought he had a very good Super Bowl for considering this is his first full season as a starter. So I think
he's done much better than Lamar Jackson, you know, and which brings me up to my final point before we go to the basketball portion. My final point is in terms of Brock Purdy, you're right. He put that team on its back in the first two playoff games. He didn't get the opportunity in the Super Bowl because he didn't have the ball last. And I watched Inside the NFL for the first time. Since I was a kid, from beginning to end, and for you old timers, you'll smile when you hear this. When I started watching Inside the NFL as a child, it was Nick Bonaconte and Len Dawson. Nick Bonaconte, the All-Pro tackle with the Miami Dolphins, Hall of Famer on the undefeated team, Super Bowl team. Len Dawson, Super Bowl III MVP, I believe. Don't quote me, but Super Bowl winner with the Chiefs. And that's when it was a classy show. Now it's gone to hell. You know, I don't care for the flavor of it now. When I say flavor, I mean the younger style, the way they talk, not culturally, but I'm just like, I just like that dignified approach that Len Dawson and Nick Bonaconte brought to the table. And that's not how I like my sports shows. It was just that one show. It was, you know why? Because that was the show where I learned the voice of John Facenda. And I'll never forget the Oakland Raiders. They came out with the lightning of Zeus. I mean, he was just had the same. And that's what kind of made it the opera, the dignified show. So I watched it for the first time. And they were whining. And they were properly whining. They were properly whining how the Raiders did not run the ball enough to help Lamar Jackson. You know, and then that's all they whined for 2 minutes. And you know what they were saying? This is what they were saying. Lamar Jackson can't carry his team. They're saying they lost because they didn't win the running game. But yet they won't give Purdy that credit either. You know, the main excuses for Lamar, this is Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark is very tribal, meaning he's very racist at times, plays a race card, and that's what he's done with Brock Purdy, which I find offensive and racist. But yet he gives Lamar a pass. Lamar's going to be a great quarterback. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. What I've irked me is they give Lamar Jackson a pass, and they dump on Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy may not be the player Lamar is talent-wise, but neither was Joe Montana. I mean, who's the better athlete, Lamar Jackson or Joe Montana? You know, right. Lamar Jackson.
Obviously.
Who do you want on your team? You want Joe Montana, Tom Brady, vice versa. So you want the better quarterback. The tale is still to be told on Brock Purdy because he's only year two. And despite being in what, year 6 or 7, Lamar is beginning to show the development of an actual quarterback. And people, look, sometimes it takes a while. Look at Vinny Testaverde, Heisman Trophy winner, NFL bust. After 6, 7, 8 years, turned his career around and became an NFL starter. Had a 20-plus-year career.
Look at Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon is another one. And that's how I see Lamar Jackson. Right. Yeah, and that's how I see Lamar Jackson.
And he became a Super Bowl winning champ, a quarterback. So
that's right. Oh my God, the great Philadelphia, I wouldn't consider him a great Philadelphia quarterback, but he changed the game for the Eagles, Randall Cunningham. Wasn't he the quarterback when the Vikings went to the, yes, went to the championship game? Yeah. See, so these players can't, I'm not dogging on Lamar Jackson. I'm dogging on those analysts and the racist analysts I call Ryan Clark, because you're willing to crap on a guy just because he's white and make excuses with a guy because he's black, where I see two great up-and-coming quarterbacks. Come fantasy day next year, do you think I'm going to sit there? I don't want Lamar Jackson because he can't win. Give me that butt. Give me those legs. Give me those CDs. He's going to be the Ravens and the Lions are going to be scarier next year than I think the 49ers are at their best. Why? Because the Ravens and the Lions, Eddie, have a killer instinct. And I'm sorry, I love the Niners. I root for them. But I don't see that out of them. You know, I don't see that killer instinct out of them, and I think that's a problem for their head coach. They need to bring in a Ray Lewis in there. They need to bring in a Travis Kelce type, that type of personality. I mean, Ray Lewis and Travis Kelce are completely different, but they get in your face. They instill the passion. They make you want to go to war with them, and that's
I would argue Fred Warner's that way. For sure.
I would say Greenlaw's that way too, but there's a difference.
Greenlaw's more by example. Fred Warner's vocal. Greenlaw's more, I'm going to hit you and knock you on your ass type of player. He leads by example, whereas Greenlaw leads by his voice. Warner.
So they need more of that. I would say that the
Niners are still going to be a team to watch out for. They're built to win now.
I don't know if
Trent Williams is going to play another year. And then, you know, they have these contracts going to be coming. I mean, Brock Purdy has one more year before he's going to have to re-sign for more than whatever, and less than $1 million he's going to make next year. So they're built to win now. And hopefully they don't get this hangover. No team, I think, has ever come back from losing two of the last three or four Super Bowls and come back and win the following year, which is what the Niners are going to face if they win it next year. I think it's going to be between them and the Lions. They're both built to win now. Green Bay's up and coming. You can't ignore that. I mean, that team came out and showed pretty well.
You're right.
Any
given Sunday is what I'm saying. But the Lions are maturing to next year is the beginning of here's our window. The Niners are coming to the end of their window because of salary cap, age, and wear and tear. Here's what people forget.
For sure.
The Niners now have, what, 3, 4, 5 seasons of playoff play. That's an extra month of an NFL season. Over 4 years, right. That's 4 extra months. You know, the Niners are becoming the lesser version, the stepchild sister. Exactly. And trust me, I'm a big, you know, I'm rooting for Brock Purdy. And no, you tribalistic fools, not because he's white, but because I'm a small guy. I had never achieved anything where, damn, William's going to get that done. It's always been, damn, that was William? You know, I overachieved. So when I see Brock Purdy doing what he did, I start rooting for him. That's why I was a big Steve Young fan, because who can come out of Joe Montana's shadow where Steve Young did? Well, most other quarterbacks fail. And I'm rooting for Lamar, because everybody said, oh, he's only a running quarterback. But he's a God-fearing human being. And God-fearing human beings have good minds, good souls, and good hearts. And I knew as long as his agent wasn't Don King, he could do well.
Yeah. I'm going to say something controversial just to support your Steve Young take there. You know, for years, you know, I'm a big-time diehard Niner fan. I've watched them since DeBerg, you know, and then, you know, of course.
Steve DeBerg.
Yeah, Steve DeBerg was recorded, and I love Steve DeBerg. That's the reason why I started following the Kansas City Chiefs, because when he left the Niners, I think he went to Denver, then he went to Kansas City.
Wasn't it Joe Montana
after that, then Steve Bono, then Elvis Gerback, then Alex Smith. That's the reason why I like the Chiefs. Anyway, But for years, when the Niners had Steve Young, I always thought that Steve Young could have been the better quarterback longer term than Joe Montana. And that's a controversial thing to say here in 49er land, just because
not at all.
Montana was a great freaking quarterback. But I thought Steve Young was freaking awesome because he had the ability to run, and he could throw just as accurately as Joe Montana, and he was just a sturdier guy. He very rarely got hurt, whereas Joe Montana, he got hurt every freaking other game.
He got hurt a lot. Concussions, he got knocked out.
That's why he ended his career with the concussions. But I'm just saying, he wasn't injured as often as Joe Montana. And I always told this to all my friends, you know, in the Bay that, no, I'm a Niner fan and they're Niner fans. I always said Steve Young would have been a better quarterback and probably had all the accolades if he had gotten the chance to play earlier over Joe Montana. That's my call.
No, you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. He was a better athlete, the better quarterback, the better arm, the more accurate arm. But Joe Montana was so cerebral. He was like Bernie Kosar, like Tom Brady. They're not natural athletes, but their mind is able to process and read so quickly and hit their guys. And that's right. But yeah, Steve Young, he just started. Steve Young, people don't realize the reason concussions ended his career, is because he was running for his life in the USFL. People don't realize the USFL, the Los Angeles Express, they were hurting so much financially, they couldn't afford a running back, a quality running back. So Steve Young goes, I'll volunteer. That's how bad off he was. And then he went to Tampa Bay, which was a terrible team. And then he went to, by then he wasn't beat up, but he was no longer young. And in fact, people don't remember, they forget, Steve Young was pretty much saying either, give me a chance to start, or trade me or cut me or I want to go somewhere now to play. And that's why that started the domino effect of Joe Montana's end there. Joe Montana did not like Steve Young because he knew Steve Young was better. He knew it was only a matter of time. And that's in fact, but give Montana credit. He went to Kansas City, took him to the championship game, couldn't get over the hump, but still he turned Kansas City into somebody for a couple of years, you know, before Mahomes came along. All right, brother, let's good talk to the Niners. Wow, that took about 15 minutes, 18 minutes of talk. That was supposed to be a couple of minutes. Woo! Let's get into what this show is actually about today. It was originally going to be an all-NBA show, but it still is in a way. We're going to talk about the NBA head coaches. Three head coaches have been fired so far in the season. Is that correct? Is it three or four? Three, right, Eddie?
Yeah.
Three head coaches have been fired. And we had the NBA All-Star Weekend, and Mr. Eddie Aparicio, the Matador de El Salvador, saw it all. And I want to get his take specifically. I don't want us to forget that. I want to get your take on the three-point, not the contest, but the one-on-one between the girl and Kerr. That's terrible. I said the girl because I can't remember her name. She's
Sabrina Ionescu.
Yep. Yeah, somebody's gonna jump at me when me say she's inconsequential. She's inconsequential because she's not an NBA player. She's a woman, so she's a female in basketball, so I don't care. I don't watch the NBA. I don't watch college ball. Yeah, so that's why I say she's inconsequential, not because she's a woman. All right, let's get right into it. You know, I love talking about the Brooklyn Nets because I love laughing at Ben Simmons. I love laughing at their drama. I love how they let Harden play them. I love how they let Ben Simmons play them. I love how stupid their owner is. How can a billionaire become a billionaere yet run a team as inept as that man does? So I'm not a Brooklyn Nets fan, but I enjoy watching their drama. Anyway. They just fired,
Jacques Vaughn.
Give me your take. Okay, some notes before I get your take. So the team's last game before the All-Star break was a 50-point loss to the Celtics. And when you lose that big and you're not doing well, that may be the impetus to get you fired. But there are reports that some players had lost confidence in him. But he's been with the Nets since 2016. He was 64-65, so he can't be all that bad of a coach. But the Nets are in 11th place in the Eastern Conference with a 21-33 record. He was replaced by assistant Kevin Ollie. So question number one, is this a legitimate firing, or should the Nets have given him more time?
You know, I don't know what the Nets were expecting, honestly, man. I mean, because, you know, how do you expect a team to be better when you lose, you know, a Harden, you lose a Kyrie Irving, you lose a Kevin Durant, you know, you lose, you know, a Ben Simmons, you know, actually Ben Simmons on the team because he's actually been hurt, but that's what I meant, right? He's been hurt.
Wasn't he born hurt?
But what I'm saying is that, you know, you brought Mikal Bridges, you've got Cameron Johnson, you got Nick Claxton, you had Spencer Dinwiddie, who's no longer with them anymore. Now you lose him too. Now he's with the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, what can you expect for having a team that had three top-heavy, superstar, talented guys, and then you strip that away? And what I think would happen is that there was a period of time, like in December, when, you know, the Nets were playing out of their minds. They had this kind of positionless basketball where everybody was like-sized. You know, they're all kind of like wing defenders, you know, kind of positionless basketball where, you know, everybody can guard everybody kind of type players. They were kind of like that, and they were surprising a lot of teams playing that well without that much talent on their team. So I think, you know, for whatever reason, that owner thought, hey, man, we're maybe better than we really are. You know, and Jacques Vaughn had that team playing pretty well, and then all of a sudden it just kind of went to crap. And, you know, but I think what happened is that people started figuring out how to play against them. They figured them out, and I think Jacques Vaughn probably just didn't make the right adjustments. He doesn't have the talent to be a contender. So, I don't understand why he was fired when the team actually was playing pretty well, unless there were some other things behind the scenes that we don't know about where he's lost some of the team, like was, you know, alluded to in some of the articles that I read that he was losing, you know, some players. So that's probably the main impetus for why this happened. But as far as the team playing, they were playing pretty damn well for a period of time. It's just that they don't have as much talent as other teams, so you can't expect much. So I don't understand why this was done, in my opinion.
You know, Eddie, you're right in the sense that I was at a loss. I'm not the big basketball aficionado that you are, but I follow sports well enough to, and we started covering sports last season. So I was well aware of the Brooklyn Nets, and it boggled my mind reading articles alluding to what you just said, that they can still compete. They can still go deep. You know, they thought it's like you just gutted your team. And you still think you can compete this year? No. No, you can't. Yeah. But, but at the end of the day, in defense of these coaches who get fired in bad situations, there's only an X amount of jobs. So when he was offered that job, he probably jumped on it. You know, now Kevin Ollie is his the interim coach. You know anything about him?
I just know him as a former player, but I don't know anything about his style as a coach. I mean, you know, he's been on the team. We'll see what he can do. I mean, the bottom line is that the Nets aren't a contending team. They're in rebuild stage. They are in total rebuild stage after what they lost, right? So they shouldn't expect much. But I think, like I said, I think some other behind-the-scenes kind of things were happening. That's why I think the team, you know, decided to go ahead and, you know, get rid of Jacques Vaughn and bring up somebody else to kind of, you know, stabilize the locker room and then kind of, you know, try and rebuild from there. But you know, this was not a move made because they expected the team to be better than they were. It had to do with something other things that, you know, we just aren't just not apparent to us right now.
Here's my problem with the NBA. I think the NBA is the worst league out of all of them is the inmates run the asylum. And over in Brooklyn, man, those players seem to have a lot of say there in being able to when they complain or they say something, you know, there's nobody in that organization go, you're a player, we're paying you. Shut up and sit down. And you don't do that every time because sometimes there's legitimate issues, but sometimes you got to just do that. Son, we're paying you $150 million to shoot the ball, not to come here and whine. So go shoot the ball. But the NBA lost control of its players decades ago, and it's a reason I think their ratings aren't nowhere near, say, football. We don't gravitate towards that. We want to like our players, and a lot of players have come across unlikable. And
it's true.
When you sit there and see several players had reportedly lost confidence in Vaughn, is it what? They were pissed off because they weren't getting their playing time? They're pissed off because he didn't do this and that? It's like, you know, I question that. You know, I just think the Brooklyn Nets are a terribly run organization the last few years. You know, and when the inmates run the asylum, that does nothing but just make it a worse organization. So I have no respect for that organization as it stands now. And I do feel bad for Javon. But that said, I know. But that said, so what I'm understanding from you is you explained why it happened. You don't think it was the right call because that team just is not where it thinks it's at. Right. And the final question is, can the Nets come back from all this? I would say no. As long as they have that owner who's wishy-washy and they don't have a strong general manager that can bring in a head coach, they need a head coach with the rings here, Eddie. But I don't think they have the players anymore to woo a head coach who's won championships, you know? It's just another team now. But that's what I think they need. But in your opinion, can they come back from that this year, become competitive and make a playoff run?
No. They're a team that is filled with a bunch of really good role players that would make a lot of other teams that are competing very good. That's what they're comprised of. They would be a good team for a lot of contending teams to trade with because they have pretty good talent from a non-superstar standpoint, but more from a glue, you know, role player standpoint. I think that's they're an accumulation of a lot of these type of players all in one team, and they're just not built to win. They're in rebuild, and you know they're acquiring draft picks and they're trying to build for the future. They're not going to recover this year. There's no way. Maybe gotcha. 3 years, possibly 3 years is a lifetime in the NBA.
That's a lifetime in the NBA. But your point is made. Now we talked about briefly off and on, but just give me your take here real quick. I love doing things in groups, and there's been a couple of other firings this year. My three questions: Adrian Griffin, was it the right call to fire him from the Milwaukee Bucks earlier in the year?
You know, I got to tell you that was to me what I see happening. Is that ownership is regretting getting rid of Mike Budenholzer. That's what I see happening. They got rid of Mike Budenholzer because, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks had won a championship and then they came back and I don't think they made the finals. And then the last year, you know, they got ousted in the playoffs as well, and that's when he got fired. Then they brought Adrian Griffin in here. Adrian Griffin had a winning record when he got fired, and the only reason why he got fired mainly is because their defense, which is what the Milwaukee Bucks hung the hat on, is their defense was, you know, usually in the top 5 or 6 net rating in the NBA, and they fell to, like, you know, in the 20s. So that, from an analytics standpoint, they weren't showing as good of a team as they had in the past. Even though their record was saying otherwise, they were just winning differently. They brought in a Damian Lillard, you know, who is a scorer. They didn't ever really had that kind of a scoring talent at the guard position. They had Chris Middleton, who, you know, is not necessarily a superstar talent. He's a great player, but he's not like a superstar talent like Damian Lillard. You have to figure out how to integrate all these players together. The Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo twosome is that's deadly, especially on a pick and roll. So, and they were showing that early on, but their defense just took a backseat. I mean, Damian Lillard never was a really good defensive player. He's an offensive player. So, you know, then they fire him and they bring in Doc Rivers. And then Doc Rivers comes in, and they haven't been winning either with Doc Rivers. You know, there's an adjustment period. They're trying to figure out what they have. They're still a playoff, you know, potentially title-contending team. I just think that all of these moves show a lot of desperation by the ownership. And in my opinion, like I said, I think this shows that they're regretting the firing of Mike Budenholzer.
I agree. And in essence, you're saying Doc Rivers is not the answer. It goes back to the original, to their championship coach being fired. All right. Now, Wes Unseld Jr., I believe he resigned from the Washington Wizards. Was that this year? Yeah, earlier this year, correct?
Right.
And he was replaced by Brian Keith. So was Wes Unseld legit? Should he have gone to the wayside with that team?
They have some talent, but there's very similar to the Brooklyn Nets. They have, you know, a Kyle Kuzma who was, you know, probably considered the best player. Then they traded for Jordan Poole, and Jordan Poole came from the Warriors, who's also a pretty talented player, but hasn't really found his footing over in Washington. They have Danny Avdija, very good player from Israel. And actually, he's been playing pretty well. But outside of those three, they don't really have anybody there that really can, you know, sell tickets. So, I, in my opinion, they're another team that's in rebuild. I think they just had to do something because they had such a horrible record. I think they're like the third or second worst record in the NBA. So I think they just had to make this move in order to, you know, placate the fan base. You know, the fan base is probably getting restless. They made some trades recently. You know, they traded away their starting center, Daniel Gafford, to the Dallas Mavericks. You know, they're just a team that is in rebuild mode. And, I think they felt that they had to make this move in order to placate the fan base. That's what I
think. Yeah. What about the interim coach, Brian Keith? Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I don't know much about him, so I really couldn't comment on him.
Gotcha. Okay. And those are your three coaches firing. So it sounds it's like, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks, that was a premature move. Jacques Vaughn was I don't want to say premature, but, obviously the owner's not on the same page with reality in terms of what the Brooklyn Nets are. So we'll keep an eye on all this, Eddie, and see how it all breaks down for the year. I'm really interested to see how the Bucks do, because Lillard went there to go win a championship, you know, and we'll see how that goes. We're not going to talk about it this week, but I did see an article I want to talk to you about down the road, if anything bears fruit, that Golden State, your team, we'll talk about this next week, may have been trying to trade for LeBron or something to that extent.
Yeah, that was real.
Yeah, and next week we'll also talk about, don't let me forget, people, about how Klay Thompson has been benching for this rookie kid who most people would assume has come out of nowhere, but really hasn't. He's slowly been building. It's like the team saw the sign. So we'll talk about that next week, because we don't have time this week. But lots of basketball still to come, despite the midpoint we're at. Now, that said, any final comments on Jacques Vaughn getting fired before we move on?
No.
All right, brother. Actually, we're not moving on. We're going to stay on head coaches. I do have another set of questions I want to ask you. Some of these coaches, they say they're on the hot seat. Monty Williams and the Detroit Pistons. We talked about him. You said that the owner knows it's a rebuild. It says, but is he in a situation where it's like Arthur Smith of the Atlanta Falcons? Yeah, he's coming back next year. He's coming, but then he just started losing games in horrific ways, and the ownership felt they had no choice but to fire him. Is Monty Williams in a similar situation? He's got to keep showing growth, build, but if this team starts to look terrible in the second half, where they should be showing signs of at least fundamental improvements, is he on the hot seat, and could he be let go if that team doesn't show improvement in the second half?
I think that he has a long leash, and it's primarily because he's got the reputation for being a culture builder. I think that's why he was brought there. I think what's kind of happened, though, is that, you know, they have the Detroit Pistons have some talented players, right? They're not like oozing with a bunch of talented players, but they have some talented players. And I think that, you know, the fan base, you know, is getting frustrated by the number of starting lineups that Monty Williams has been pushing out there, kind of having short leashes on some, you know, some of their rookie players that have shown out very well, and then having some veteran players who have longer leashes that maybe make dumb mistakes, but he keeps them in there just because he trusts the veterans over the rookies. And then you kind of question it. If you have a losing record, why are you doing that, right? Are you really trying to win games if you're doing that? I mean, you should be playing these young guys and let them learn, you know, learn by doing it. You know, let them mess up. It's okay. They're losing, right? You're there to develop the players and change the culture. So I think that's probably why you're seeing the ownership for the Detroit Pistons kind of getting a little impatient on the way he's running the team and how he's, you know, distributing the playing time. You know, he's not giving all of the young guys, at least all of the guys that they've drafted very high, namely an Asar Thompson, one of the Thompson twins. Amen Thompson is the guy who plays for Houston. Asar Thompson is the guy who plays for the Detroit Pistons. And his playing time has been erratic. He's been a starter, then he's on the bench, starter, bench. You know, then you have, you know, other guys that they traded for, like a James Wiseman from the Warriors. He barely sees any playing time. You know, and why are you doing that? This guy has got a lot of talent. Yeah, he does make dumb mistakes, but freaking everybody makes dumb mistakes. Even freaking Steph Curry makes dumb mistakes. So let them play, right? So anyway, I think that's part of what's going on is that the ownership, I think, you know, they have to sell tickets, right? And maybe the fan base are kind of, you know, rebelling and not going to the games as much. And so they feel like they have to make a call. And, you know, it's possible that Monty Williams is on the hot seat. I mean, he should be on the hot seat, you know, for having a record the way he has. But if he's being brought there to change the culture, he should be doing that, but then also playing the guys like they should. I mean, you know, the GM, whoever, should be telling them, look, we need these guys to play them. You know, I don't care about your record. We want you to play these guys. We need to develop these players. When it's not about this year, it's about the next 2 years. So do your job and just do it. Someone needs to just instill it in him and just do it. So maybe that needs to happen. If he doesn't, maybe he's the type of coach that says, nah, I'm going to run it my way. Screw you. And now they have to make a decision to go ahead and fire him. So he's possibly on the hot seat just because the team is not doing as well as I think they hoped. But there's no way in hell that team's a contending team right now. So that, let the young guys play and see where it goes.
So what about Darvin Ham of the Los Angeles Lakers and Jason Kidd of the Dallas Mavericks? Ironically, Jason Kidd is the former head coach of the Brooklyn Nets.
You know, it's interesting. I was surprised to hear that Jason Kidd was potentially on the hot seat. I think it's because he's been on this kind of arc before where he comes in and the team does well, you know, the very first year like he did at Milwaukee. And then he's come here and done the same thing, you know, for the Dallas Mavericks. And then they kind of don't do so well, you know, at Brooklyn Nets as well. They don't do so well the next year and the year after that. It's not on the same freaking trajectory, right? It's just, it kind of teeters a little bit. And I think that their thinking is, you know, they're on the same path with Dallas. Although Dallas, they scare me. This team scares me a lot just because you have a very healthy now Kyrie Irving who's playing very, very well. He's honestly the best one-on-one player in the NBA right now, and nobody can guard him. He just puts people on skates. And you know what that means is like when he's dribbling, there's nobody who can stay in front of him. He just makes people look bad. So you have him who can break down the defense. You have Luka Doncic, who's the same kind of player, but he's a bigger version of him, and he can play at his own pace. He doesn't really overwhelm you with his dribbling ability. He just overwhelms you with, you know, being able to do whatever he wants to at any time. You have those two guys who are all-star caliber talented players, and then you have guys surrounded by, you know, they're surrounded by shooters who can, you know, extend the defense. And then now they just traded for, you know, a few big guys that are make them even more dangerous. They have PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, you know, who joined them. And this team, in my opinion, is going to be very dangerous. So I don't think Jason Kidd should be on the hot seat, unless with these new acquisitions that they made, this team still doesn't do what it should be doing. And I would say that if they stay 500 from here on out, then I'd say yes, potentially he's on the hot seat. But if they're not, if they're more than 500, no way. I think he's got more talent than he ever has had over at in Dallas. So we shall see. But I don't think he deserves to be on the hot seat. That surprises me. Darvin Ham. So this is another one that was a little perplexing as well. But I understand why he was getting being rumored to be on the hot seat. It's only because, you know, LeBron James, he runs that team. He runs that organization. Let's face it, right? He's got a big voice. He sells tickets. He's probably the biggest, you know, superstar in the NBA planet, you know, and, you know, Curry's on his heels too, like I said before. But, you know, Darvin Ham and LeBron have had some issues. And it's not really clear as to what those issues are, but it's come out even, you know, Darvin has had some issues with Austin Reeves, who is a player that, you know, LeBron James actually really, really, really likes as well. And you know, given where they were at last year, they made it to the Western Conference Finals against the Denver Nuggets, and you know, of course, they lost 4-0. But you know, with that team that didn't have as much talent as they have today, the expectations were a lot higher. As you remember in my preseason edition of our Points on the Board, I had predicted that the Los Angeles Lakers would be probably a top three team in the West. Contending for a title just because of all of the moves that they made. They had this depth. To me, they're one of the deeper teams in the league. So I think that management sees this and they're like, man, we just gave you all this talent. We made all these, you know, trade deadline moves last year and you guys made it, you know, to the Western Conference Finals, and we got you even a better team this year and it's still not going. So what the hell's wrong? So
right.
It's probably a function of some issues in the locker room, which have become more apparent. And that's probably why he's more on the hot seat. And the team isn't playing as well as they should be, but you know, he's adjusting. He's got a bunch of new players, you know, and we're only, you know, we have like 30 something games left in the season. He's still adjusting. So I think he still can say it, salvage his chance to stay as the Lakers head coach. But you know, the time is ticking. You know, there, as you saw that there was an hourglass, meme by LeBron that he posted out, a few weeks ago that kind of people were like, what does this mean? Right. But, you know, time is ticking. He needs to turn his team around and show that they're, you know, that they are who everybody thought they are. So
there you go. There you go, people. I'm always asking for like a minute here or that, but Eddie, you get in depth and I truly appreciate that. That's what the audience loves. And I'm glad you're able to deliver on that. So good information. Who do you think should be on the hot seat? Just give me one name off the top of your head.
Oh, man.
Oh, and Kyle Shanahan of the Niners doesn't count.
No, you're talking from the NBA standpoint.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of you.
Yeah, let me think about that for a second. Hold on, because you caught me off guard.
It's one of those questions. 32 slots you have to think about right now. You know.
Yeah, you know.
Maybe the Toronto Raptors head coach.
No, I would say. Shoot. I'm looking at the standings right now, and the only team that I would say is probably not playing as good as they should is probably the Phoenix Suns.
Right. You mentioned that from the since the beginning of the season, they haven't been playing well, right?
They're only four games above 500. They have arguably three of the best scoring trios in the NBA with Durant, Booker. I mean, those two right there are lethal. Then you have Bradley Beal, who's another in that same mold. They're all really good outside shooters, can break defenses down from a dribbling standpoint, but they haven't all been playing together at the same time because Bradley Beal had back issues early in the season. But now they've been playing together, and you know, they have a pretty well-rounded roster, but for whatever reason, they're not playing like they should be. But they're a team to watch out for. I mean, the second half of the season is going to tell you a lot about how this team is going. I mean, they're built to win it all. They're a very balanced team, and they have good depth. But the thing is that they're underperforming. So if you were to kind of put my feet to the fire, I'd probably say, you know, the coach of the Phoenix Suns might be on the hot seat.
There you go, people. All righty. Let's talk NBA All-Star. It's a big hoopla. The NBA has invested millions into promoting this weekend now. It's a big event, and I kind of like it. Even though I'm not the NBA fan as you are, I like how the NBA and MLB, and I think hockey does it as well. It's in the middle of the season, and it just stopped everything and make it a big event, you know? Whereas nobody cares about the crap they do before the Super Bowl. We're focused on the Super Bowl. We don't care about a damn flag football game at the end of the season. Right. Now, if they stop the season, then in the middle of the season, that'd be different. But for football, it's much more difficult. But what fails for football is a potential conquest for the NBA. Now, let me give you an overview. I guess it was called, there was something called State Farm All-Star Saturday Night. It was one of the first week titles. That night, television ratings drew the most viewers in 4 years. And the audience peaked with 5.4 million viewers from 10 to 10:15 p.m. Eastern. And that was during what I want to talk about. We're not going to talk about it right just yet, but it peaked at the Stephen Curry versus Sabrina 3-point challenge. What was Sabrina's last name?
Ionescu.
What is that? Is that Italian or something? Greek or something?
I don't know,
Italian?
Man. I got to look it up. Ionescu.
That's a cool name, though. Ionescu. Get away. Ionescu. I can have my drill sergeant about his last names. I'm going to need you. Get up here now. Drum. Give me 20. All right. Okay, There were a lot of highlights, but the big lowlight, which I don't understand, but again, I'm not a fan. I didn't watch any of this, is that I guess the fans were screaming for the last couple of years, we want a competitive game, you know? And I guess the NBA promises, we're making it, it's going to be competitive. And it wasn't a competitive game. It was a high-scoring game. Don't get into the shooting because I've broken it up here a little bit into sections here. Not that I'm trying to lay this out how I want to talk about it, but there's so much happening here. You know, it's easy to get overwhelmed. So just on the fans wanting it competitive, Eddie, does it really matter regardless of how high the score gets? I mean, the high score didn't have anything to do with the competitiveness. It's one game in the middle of the season that doesn't count for anything. And so does it matter if it's competitive or not? But more importantly, would it really change who watches the game or not? I don't think it would. I think they would get the same amount of viewers if it was a competitive game versus a non-competitive game, because we don't lock into the All-Star game because there's going to be a competitive great game that's going to affect our feelings and emotions because we're rooting for our favorite team here or there. None of that matters. It's not an NBA final.
Yeah.
So am I looking at it wrong?
No, I agree. I mean, look at all the other sports. Okay, you got, you know, the baseball. I remember as a kid growing up, and even today, I just want to watch these guys play because they play for my team, especially if a guy from my team made it to the All-Star game. I just want to see how they play. I don't care about who wins or loses. I don't really care, man. I just want to see the best of the best play on the biggest stage of that sport. And, you know, that's what I think, you know, the NFL, unfortunately, the NFL All-Star or the All-Pro thing, I never really liked it. As a kid, I loved it. You know, as a kid, I think you're more into it, right?
Right. It's for kids.
Yeah, you're a kid. You're like, oh, you gravitate to the players, you know, and you want to see these players play. You don't care about the outcome. You just like watching them play. You know, same thing with the NBA. I think it's just a glorified pickup game, honestly. And I think that's the way the NBA should look at it. That's the reason why you're seeing these high-scoring outputs is because nobody wants to guard anybody. They just let them go ahead and showcase their talents in front of the entire world and let them shoot the three from 40 feet, do a 360 dunk, you know, in front of, you know, with no defense, whatever it is. Well, you know, that's what people want to see. They don't care about a competitive, you know, a game. That's more of the NBA brass wanting it for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because, you know, maybe they're taking a sample of some people who gave them some feedback that they think a more competitive game might get them better ratings. I don't think so, man. The ratings show itself that it's still people watch it. It doesn't matter if it's competitive or not. It's just a glorified pickup game. Continue doing what you're doing. And if you really want to make it competitive, then just go ahead and do something completely out of left field. Go ahead and, you know, rather than just having three-pointers, go ahead and make a four-point shot, a five-point shot. Hell, make a half-court be a 10-point shot. Whatever it is, go ahead and just go all out if you want to make it competitive. Or if you want to do what baseball did, you know, that make it an East versus West. Whoever wins gets home court advantage. Whatever. Just pick something. But it doesn't matter, right? If you want to make it competitive, I gave you some ideas to make it competitive, right? But
I agree.
They just want to watch their players play. That's it.
I agree. Plus, here's the other thing, too. When you play defense, you got to get physical. I mean, you don't have to, but, I mean, there's more chance of injury.
You're guarding this.
I mean, you're guarding, so injuries, you're tangling up. That's what happens when you play defense. These guys don't want to get hurt, so they're going to play loose and happy. Like, and they're going to take shots they wouldn't in the real game, you know. They're going to out of you. I mean, you're going to see a little bit of the Harlem Globetrotters with some of the players in terms of how they look at the game. And so I think that's overblown. But he's getting hammered for it. The commission. Adam Silver. You know, I just think it's silly.
I agree. You know, let them continue. If they really, really want to make something competitive, then what they should do is not make it about basketball. I heard an interesting take on the radio station today from one of the hosts over here in San Francisco. And it was a great idea. I thought it was a great idea, and I'll just throw it out there. But it was an idea where if you really want to have something competitive, well, let's just go ahead and just make it a multiple different types of games that are not basketball and have, like, you know, Giannis versus Steph Curry play, you know, billiards or pool, or have Kevin Durant play against James Harden in ping pong, or foosball or darts, whatever it is, you know, and then right. make it fun like that, right? You get to see the personalities, you get to see how they really suck in other sports. So the people that are watching them, they can kind of connect with them more, like, oh crap, they suck in pole too, like I do, right? Whatever, right?
It's correct.
Why not, right? It's just something different. So, you know, and that's what kind of they're doing with football right now. They have flag football, then they have these other challenges, you know, that are, you know, kind of affiliated with football, but not really. But, you know, why not make it something like that? Make it fun. You know, but, you know, if they really want
competition. No, I agree.
We get them
I agree, Eddie. I agree. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the game here. I'm going to toss you out some numbers here. The East versus West record shattered. Winners put up the most points in the game, 73-year history. The previous mark was 196 by the West in 2016. This season, for those of you who aren't aware, the Eastern Conference beat the Western Conference 211 to 186. When I saw that, I'm like, that's a joke. You know, because there is no defense. That's just a complete joke. You know, and I say it in a way that's, I don't think disrespectful, but that would never happen in a regular season. So it just shows the difference in the All-Star weekend, the mentality towards the game. But so the previous mark was 196 by the West in 2016. 397 total points, Eddie, destroys the record of 374. And that was set in 2017. And people, if you notice, we're not going back for 4 or 5 years. So this has begun about 4 or 5 years ago, these high-scoring affairs. They a combined 193 points, Eddie, in the first half. And it broke the record by 2 points that was set when? Last year. So, again, this is all very recent. You know, the Eastern Conference madness. The East made 42 three-pointers. And Team LeBron in 2019 had 35. So they kind of shattered that. 7 more three-pointers. That's a lot. The East tied and any half record by scoring 104 by their mission. And I'm assuming they mean by any half, any two quarters combined. You know, they scored 104 by intermission. The East tried 97 three-pointers. Oh, my God. Eddie, that's what, a 45% shooting rate there, 40% shooting rate there that they made it in actually making the shots. They were just – man, these guys, they were just – see, that's what I mean by having fun. These guys were just dribbling down, looking around, I'm going to shoot, you know, and that's what it was.
Yeah. It goes to show you, like, you know, if you – you know, how good these guys are really are. That's why when you play defense, they don't shoot as well, right?
That's right. That's right.
In essence, that showcases their abilities. When they're not being guarded, you're going to see what happens. So that's why
that's a great point, Eddie. That's a great point because when I brought up the score to my friend, the three-point one, we're going to get that into real quick. Their thought was, wow, look at that, the women can compete. And I'm thinking, no, that's just her standing on the line shooting, you know? It's not somebody covering her. It's not her having it, you know? But it's funny how the woman made the leap, too. Well, see, they can compete with this. No, they can't. That's just, it's different. Okay, so shooting threes. I'm sorry. So the East tried 97 three-pointers. The previous record was 90 by Team LeBron. And hat tip to NBA.com. They had some great articles showing these numbers. Shooting threes, the teams combined, Eddie, for 66 threes made and 168 three-points attempted. See, that's mind-boggling to me. That many 3 points in one game. The previous records were 62 and 167 in 2019. So they kind of barely beat that. But nevertheless, they barely beat it. You know what I'm seeing here, Eddie? I'm seeing here just a pickup game. Yeah, that's all this was a pickup game. Any thoughts on all these threes? It seems like people, especially there's a handful of people. That's your job. Your job is to make 3-pointers. Stephon Curry is one of those type of players. You know, you have permission. Any 3-pointers, take it. It seems like this is the type of game where everybody wants to show the world I can shoot up a 3-pointer. What's your thought on Well, let me ask you the question in a row. What's your thoughts on this being so high scoring? What are your pros on it? And since it's an All-Star game, do you actually have any cons to this?
You know, obviously there's somebody complaining about the way that this All-Star game is going. you know, with no defense being played, a bunch of offense, and, right. you know, no resistance at all. And these guys are just doing a glorified pickup game. Heck, man, I mean, who cares, like I said, about it being competitive? They just want to see right. the players do what they do, you know? And like I said, if right. you really, really want to make it real fun, shit, go ahead and throw out, you know, 5-pointers, 6-pointers, 7-pointers, 10-pointers, whatever, man. Then it'll be interesting, right?
it's a game know, for fun, for enjoyment.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem. I have no problem with the way it's been going. Is it fun to watch? Not really. After a while, you go, eh, whatever. But you still watch because you want to see somebody make, like, a ridiculous dunk, a ridiculous shot. And because you know it's going to happen, right? And that's all that people right. care about watching. They don't care about who wins. They just want to see these guys play. That's it.
Okay. So my other question to you, though, is not as friendly. This is happening in the regular season. We've seen some high-scoring affairs that have come out of – I don't say come out of nowhere, but, I mean, the average fan was like, whoa, this player just threw up 50 points, 70 points. And then it happened during multiple games with some of these teams. As an analogy – today's quarterback will never be the ghost to me because the rules have hindered defenses. Defenses have their hands tied. It seems yeah. to me that the same thing's happening in the NBA. They don't want strong defense. They want high scoring affairs, but it seems to be getting out of hand in certain ways. Are rule changes needed to bring back a little bit of defense? Or does the NBA doesn't really care about defenses? They're okay with these high-scoring affairs, thinking it's better for the game?
That's a good question, Guillermo, just because I think, you know, when people watch basketball, they like scoring. And when they watch any sport, they like scoring. I mean, part of the reason why I think Americans, I mean, I think they're starting to like it more, but the reason why they historically didn't really like soccer that much is because there's that much scoring in it, right?
They still don't.
Say it again?
They still don't. At the adult level, they don't. Kids are playing soccer. Yeah. Now, soccer is the number two sport for kids, but it's expensive. You know, you have to maintain and build all those fields. So by junior high or high school, they stop it, and adults have never gained interest. But I get your point. We're Latinos. I'm just
yeah, my whole
soccer
point
is long and boring.
People like seeing scoring, right? So
right, correct.
I think the NBA, I think it's they're okay with the way it's going because, you know, their ratings are still good. But it's, when it comes down to the playoffs, you know, we'll see. Because the playoff basketball is very, very different. You know, people are seeing tendencies from teams, studying the tendencies, figuring out how to stop certain, you know, plays, certain players. It's different. But you know, if it continues and they're getting a lot of complaints and they're seeing their ratings fall, then yeah, then the NBA will go ahead and make a change. But until then, I think that they don't have an issue with it.
Gotcha. Okay. So my final question before we move on from the All-Star game per se and into the 3-point contest, there were two of them. Who are you rooting for, Eddie? I would imagine the West.
Yeah. My hometown player, man, Steph Curry. But I definitely wanted Ionescu to do well, which she did. She did really well, man. And I actually, she had Curry on the ropes a little bit, honestly.
She did. She came out hot, Eddie.
Yeah, and you know what? What they should do, I think, for next time is they probably should put the women's 3-point line for her, and then keep the NBA 3-point line for the male, you know, for the in this competition. Then you can
you
see
know what?
Who really is mm-hmm.
the best in their league. You're absolutely right, and that's what Kenny Smith was saying, and they eviscerated him for it. I people who know basketball understood what he was talking about. It's kind of like golf, you know. You got the yeah. women's team and the men's team, you know. But yeah. that said, I disagree with Kenny Smith because this is just a fun event. You know, so, and to me, this is an advantage for the women to show that they can compete with the men.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and so I thought there was more pressure on Curry. She had no pressure.
Was.
She's the woman. Absolutely. She's not expected to do as well. And that's what makes it so exciting. Because as a man, you're like, dude, what are you doing? Curry, what the hell are you doing, man? You know, as a man, that's how you're looking at it. Here's this upstart woman. And I'm just being honest, folks. It doesn't. That we want to see him hammer the chick, but you just innately, it's like, when I was in the States, I'd be rooting for my Panamanian boxers because they were always the underdogs. When I was in Panama, I would root for the American boxer who'd always lose Roberto Duran just because they were the underdog. I mean, we root for things for various reasons, but there's an innateness in all of us, gender-wise, where when it's a man versus a woman, the men would tend to root for the man, the woman for the woman. And this is a type of contest where it truly is equal, because three-point shooting is technical. You know, yes. You got to have good form. Good. And she proved that she's as good as Curry in my eyes at the male. Was it the men's three-point line they did it at?
Yeah, they both did it at the male three-point line. So
kudos for her.
Absolutely. She showed out. And the thing is that, you know, they have this other woman player coming, you know, who's in the college ranks, Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark,
who, you know, just broke the NCAA record for all-time scoring for women, and is about to probably pass the all-time scoring for men as well. So she could be
No,
no, Pete, that's what I'm saying. She could pass up Pete Maravich, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, she's got 1,000 points to go, bro.
Yeah. She's about to do it, man. So you never know, right? So my whole point in bringing her up is that you have another sharpshooter coming into the NBA, WNBA possibly next year, and the next year's All-Star game is going to be in San Francisco where the Golden State Warriors play. And, man, why not make it, you know, a team's event where you have two females versus two males, and then they have the three-point, you know, lines for each of the leagues, you know, where they're really supposed to be shooting from, right? And maybe even make it even more, like you'd probably maybe make it a horse game. You know, a horse game, and maybe how many free throws are made in a row. You know, whatever it is, right? They can do a bunch of different events. And I think that would be a platform that a lot of people would enjoy.
You're right.
This platform. So it got a lot of ratings. So if you bring Caitlin Clark and you bring Ionescu again, two of the probably best shooters the WNBA will probably ever see until, you know, and somebody else surpasses them, then you have the greatest shooter of all time, Steph Curry, who probably would bring – probably bring Klay Thompson, honestly. Although he probably should bring Trae Young, but he'd probably bring Klay Thompson because that's his teammate. And then they'd be like, because it's in San Francisco. And then have that be an event. That would be fun. I think that would knock out the ratings big time.
You're right, Eddie. At its peak, that's when the ratings were highest on Saturday night for the All-Star weekend. You're absolutely correct. And good for
the ladies in. Yeah. It brought the ladies
because
in,
everybody has said this. Everybody has said this in terms of expert analysts, people who have played the game. They're like, when you look at the women's game, you see clear fundamentals. You see great fundamentals because they have to use fundamentals to be able to maximize their own skills. With the NBA, these players, I mean, they toss fundamentals out the window at times for their talent to take over. That's why you see so many walks, so many palming the ball, and why refs no longer call the game as it should be called. And I think that's eventually going to change too. But my point being is this exemplifies some of the worst skills in terms of males using their talent versus fundamentals and bringing the best out of fundamentals from the ladies to show us them. And you're right. I think we get some exciting drama with this. And I think it's even more exciting than what used to be the most exciting part of the NBA All-Star Weekend, and that was the slam dunk contest. And remember the first 3 to 5 years, that was the rage, All-Star Weekend. That's all you saw because it was still so new. But you can only do so many dunks so many ways before it got old. Right. And I think the last time I cared was, I think it was Muggsy Bogues won it or competed in it.
Yep. Spud Webb,
okay. Yeah, and those guys were like 2 feet tall, you know. And, of course, I'm exaggerating, but they're like 5-something. I mean, they're like outliers. So that was the last time it was exciting. And this time I'm bringing it up just because it's part of the All-Star Weekend. I didn't care about it. I've seen these dunks over and over. However, we got to give the person his due. The winner was Mac McClung. He missed some dunks, but won with what I read was a bobble, and then he took both hands off the ball. Then he regained contact and finished it a la Mortal Kombat, like finishing. That's how dominant he finished it. And so God bless him. But the big storyline was that it was complaining about the judges favoring Jaylen Brown. You were there. You saw it. Talk to me, brother. Talk to me. What was the deal here?
You know, it was pretty to me, it was apparent that they were definitely leaning towards him unfairly, in my opinion. It was pretty obvious, in my opinion, that they were definitely showing some favoritism to Jaylen Brown, you know, because he was doing some dunks that some of the other guys were doing that, you know, honestly weren't as, you know, flashy as the other guys, but yet he was getting more of the points. And that's what you were hearing from the crowd, is that they were seeing blatant, you know, favoritism that, you know, and that's why you're hearing these boos. And then, you know, Mac McClung, he did a couple of dunks that were better, a lot better than Jaylen Brown, but then Jaylen Brown got better scores. It was kind of a hot mess, honestly. But in the end, the guy who deserved to win won it. He didn't do as well this year as he did last year, because if you saw his dunks last year, they were ridiculous. I don't know if you've seen them, William, but you got to check them out. His dunks from last year were ridiculous. So, you know, I think what they should do is bring back the last four slam dunk contest winners of the last four All-Star games, you know, taking away some of the repeat guys. But do that and just bring back some of the star power, you know. Jaylen Brown is probably one of the main – he's an all-NBA player, right? He's an All-Star. He's an right. All-NBA All-Star player. And I'm glad he did that, because a lot of these guys don't want to do it because they're embarrassed. You know, they don't want to be shown up by somebody else. They have too much pride.
No, I get that. Brought, you know, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, hopefully he's, you know, paved the way for other guys to do it, because that's what I think this, the slam dunk contest needs. It needs an infusion of star power, and guys, you know, like a Jaylen Brown, you know, or maybe just bring back, like I said, the suggestion of bringing back, you know, the last four winners of the slam dunk contest and have them compete, you know, and
gotcha. No, it makes sense, Eddie. Eddie, what you're talking about is to the audience. So what happens is you get a room of non-basketball people. Man, what can we do to get this exciting, more exciting? Eddie's idea should be talked about when they start talking about events, because you're maximizing an old, tired event. Look, I'm sorry. Dunks are exciting, but we've seen every version of a dunk possible. So the dunk contest doesn't have the same awe for us as it used to when it first started. And Eddie's idea is a phenomenal one, because you're bringing in the past champs. You're bringing in the big names, yeah. The guys who dominated it, you know, yeah. The A-teamers. And that would – because I didn't care about it this year, you know. So it's something that they have to keep working on. And I think, Eddie, you have a phenomenal idea there. So before go ahead.
I'll give you one more idea since we're on that path. If the NBA doesn't want to bring back their star players, and I get it, because then there's injury potential, right, for these star players to come and do something that's meaningless to, you know, the team that they're playing for. But another idea I threw out in a past podcast is, I don't know if you've seen any of these YouTube dunkers, but, man, why not just have it like, you know, an NBA, you know, a player, let's say the All-Star players, you know, they get to go across the country and they recruit one guy, you know, to represent their, you know, their the West or the East. And the other guys, they bring like other, you know, four or five guys across the country that are these dunkers. And then they go ahead and compete against each other. You know, even these are hand selected by these NBA All-Star guys, right? They're the ones who recruited these guys to come do it. And then you'll get more of the Mac McClungs, these unknown guys that are just jump out of the freaking, you know, out of the gym. There's this guy that, I'm going to give you a name. I think his name is Jordan Kilcan. I forgot. I'll give you the name, but this guy's ridiculous. He jumps over cars. He's a white guy with blue hair, and he jumps over cars and does reverse dunks. It's crazy. You got to see this guy. So there's a lot of guys like that across the world. Why not just do something like that, right?
No, I agree, Eddie. I agree. What you're talking about is trying to reinstill life into something that's dying. Because I don't know what anybody says, the slam dunk doesn't have the prestige it had at one time. Before we end the podcast, so Mr. Aparicio, it didn't occur to me until I saw Adam Silver talk about it. The G League. Is the G League dead? Is my title. And Silver made a great point, because of NIL in the college ranks now. Even an average kid can go and make more money in the college ranks than he'll ever make in the NBA, because he'll never make it to the NBA. However, for kids who feel they're good enough for the NBA but just need a couple of years of seasoning, or year seasoning, and they don't want to go to college, that now seems to be off the table because now they can go to college and make money. So will young kids now opt for college and a payday versus the NBA's development league? Is the G League dead? You know, you can never have enough development in the leagues, but I think this is going to set the NBA back a little bit in terms of quality talent entering the league and hitting the ground running. What are your thoughts? Let me give you an example. Isn't Chet Holmgren a product of the G League because he was so small, so skinny? He may not be the best example.
No, he wasn't.
No, he's not.
No, Chet Holmgren was drafted. A product of the G League, and probably the most known guy who's actually made it is probably Jordan Poole.
So I'm looking at it the wrong way then.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, they have the G. I think the G League is a good idea. I just think potentially this the NCAA with the name, image, and likeness. You know, people can make a lot of money now in the college ranks, but you know, they have to have a name. They have to be good in order to make a lot of money. And for those who are on the borderline, they can always go to the G League and get into the NBA too. I mean, a lot of these guys, they just want to get into the NBA whichever way possible. And this is just another avenue for them to be able to get there. So I don't think the G League is dead. I think it's just another option for people to pursue.
Gotcha. Well, I know most kids are going to pursue the money because there's going to be some kids there who realize I may not make it to the NBA. So why not eat up the money now? But like I said, you can't have enough developmental leagues because basketball is a brutal sport. I mean, by that, I mean, it's just a long season. So having your technique developed and that so you don't get beat up early on in your career, I think is extremely important. Next week, Eddie, I want to get your opinions again on the Hall of Fame. There's especially with who's deserving, who didn't make it. I've already got the notes set up. We just don't have enough time in this episode, my friends, to get to it. But I think that the All-Star Game was a success for the NBA. I think I agree with you. The Jacques Vaughn firing. That ownership and management is just on a completely fantasy plane. They remind me of libertarians. There's this utopia fantasy libertarians live in because humans have to be perfect for libertarianism to work. This owner is living in his own fantasy of what he thinks the Brooklyn Nets are versus what they really are. And 1 to 10, before we leave, Eddie, give me a grade on the All-Star game from 1 to 10. The All-Star weekend, the events, everything. What would you rate it as this year?
Because of the Steph Curry, Sabrina Ionescu challenge, I'd say about an 8. If that wasn't there, I would say it's probably a 7.
There you go, brother. I think that 3-point, that's what made it. I think it's one of those fun things of the male versus female, that's an actually fair contest, and correct, women have a shot. So I just don't want to be – I'm sorry. I would not want to be – the first male that loses to a female in a 3-point contest. This is going to happen, people.
It almost happened.
And I thought it would have been great.
He had to shoot 9 out of his last 10 shots to beat her.
I thought it would have been great? I thought it would have been great because Stephon Curry. Is it Stephon or Stephen Curry? Stephon Curry. Okay. So I think Stephon Curry losing would have been great because he's the type of player who would have laughed and enjoyed it as much as everybody else.
He totally would have. Yeah.
Versus, if LeBron James had lost, he'd probably be throwing temper tantrums still today. And I'm not saying LeBron's a bad guy. It's just the difference in personality makeup. Like Michael Jordan would have been livid, pissed off. Now, Dennis Rodman would never be in that contest, but a Dennis Rodman personality would have loved it if he lost too, because they just love attention. So hopefully the right Mayo can lose and make it an even bigger event and makes everybody happy. And with that said, Eddie, I'm with you on the Niners. I feel your pain being a Brock Purdy supporter and fan now this year. I was hoping for them to win. It's still too early for me to sit there and say that Patrick Mahomes is the GOAT just because we got 7 rings to 3 rings, you know. But Patrick Mahomes, there's no denying he makes Andy Reid look better than what Andy Reid is. And Andy Reid's a great head coach. But Andy Reid had no Super Bowls, so he got Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, in fact, he couldn't even sniff a Super Bowl. He made it to, I want to say, two Super Bowls, but I want to say one Super Bowl. And that was, I want to say two, but I know for sure one Super Bowl, but he lost either one or both of them. And he didn't win Super Bowl to Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not saying that to knock on Andy Reid. I'm saying that to show how great Patrick Mahomes is. But I feel your pain. And we've got a lot of basketball to talk next week. And my friends, you can find this podcast and our political podcast, our entertainment podcast on Grumblies Media. You can find Eddie and myself on Rumble and YouTube under the Grumblies Media profile name with our show points on the board here. You can find us on your traditional podcast outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Apple, and Google. Eddie, my friend, until next week, you take care of yourself. And for everybody and for Eddie, this is We and Them Pilar. This is Points on the Board. We bid you adieu.
Good night, Guillermo. See everyone.